voices brave enough to push back. This is the Conservative Daily Podcast with Joe Otto.
That's what the Second Amendment was designed to do. If you're going to do something to nullify or take away my rights under the Constitution, come get it.
Max McGuire.
When you look at politicians on the left, they need to convince people that they are victims.
A resistance to the resistance. And now your hosts, Joe Otto and Max McGuire.
And welcome back to another edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. My name is Max McGuire. A little bit different this week. We have a Sunday podcast instead of a Saturday podcast. We had to make sure that all of the fax recipients for our fax blast system, we had to make sure that they were all ready to go because today new members of Congress are being sworn in. So we wanted to make sure that we weren't sending faxes to old senators, old congressmen. So that's how we spent yesterday. So we are a little bit, we had to go one day late today. But the general topic today is the news of the week, that on January 6th, there will be multiple objections to the Electoral College report, the Electoral College count. And it's not just going to be, Josh Hawley, as we knew, Tommy Tuberville, Ted Cruz, and about 8 or 9 other senators have also now joined in this fight. So the total now we're looking at is over 140 House Republicans and at least 12 Senate Republicans. So this is historically the most significant challenge to the Electoral College results that we've ever seen. We've talked about this on the podcast before. We don't have to go too far into depth with it, but there's only been 2 other challenges in our history. Now, the law that governs how Electoral College results can be challenged stems from that election of 1876 that we've talked about on the podcast in the past. Democrats tried to steal the election results in Florida, South Carolina, and Louisiana. Republicans didn't want to let them, and ultimately Congress appointed a commission to decide who rightfully won those states, and along party lines, that commission awarded the states to the Republican, Rutherford B. Hayes. After that election, Congress said that they need to fix the process to make sure it wouldn't happen again. So they passed the Electoral Count Act, as we've talked about on the podcast, Title 3, Section 15 of the United States Code, which governs, basically governs the 12th Amendment, how the Electoral College votes are to be counted and how congressmen and senators can object. And as we've talked about, in order for there to be an objection, there has to be at least one congressman and one senator signed onto it. So in our history, it's only happened twice. We've talked before about the time in 2004 where a couple of Democrats challenged Ohio on ridiculous grounds that polling places closed early, things like that. Not enough to even close to change the results of the election. But the first time this was ever actually enacted was in 1969. So it took a long time for the Electoral Count Act to actually go into effect. And it happened, interestingly enough, because of the Electoral College count in North Carolina. So it was put forward by Representative James O'Hara, you can see him right there, and then Senator Edmund Muskie. Edmund Muskie, I believe he was from Maine. They are the two that signed on to this challenge. And what they were going against was the Electoral College count. So we actually have, I was able to pull the Electoral College tally from 1969 for the 1968 presidential election, and we have it here. And it's kind of hard to see. I had to take 2 pictures to make sure it would be high res. Oh man, one got moved over a little bit. Let me fix that. Move it over. Come on. There we go. So you can see this is the actual tally. They did it on loose leaf, basically. this is the tally for the Electoral College count from 1969. And what you can see, if you go all the way down, scroll all the way down to North Carolina, and you can see that instead of being written by a typewriter, it actually they had to write that one in red pen because it wasn't what they expected. North Carolina should have had 13 Electoral College votes going for Nixon, but instead what they had was 12 Electoral College votes for Nixon, 1 for Wallace. There was a faithless elector in North Carolina. So you had these 2 members of Congress, Muskie and O'Hara, challenging the legitimacy of the Electoral College vote for North Carolina, challenging the single elector. So that's going to be important as we talk about what's going to happen this week and how Republicans should maximize the effect of the challenges, because you don't have to just challenge individual states. You can challenge individual electors. So that's going to be important. But I want to, before we even dive into that, I want to kind of do a little examination of some of the ridiculous, some of the ridiculous language coming from the left, talking about what Republicans are planning to do, because the left is beside themselves. Now listen, what the Republicans plan to do this week is no different than what Democrats did the last three times a Republican was elected president. Remember, you had Maxine Waters try and challenge Donald Trump's win in 2016. Then you had in 2004, you had the senators come forward. Congressman and senator come forward challenging it. And then in 2000, you had Maxine Waters again unsuccessfully challenging the results in Florida. So the last three times a Republican has ever been elected president, you had Democrats stand and say, "I object." And one of those times was actually effective, and they actually had to force the debate and the vote. But the other two times, it was just Maxine Waters being crazy, standing up alone. This time, you're going to have, the count is 140-plus House Republicans and at least 12 Senate Republicans objecting. We've never seen this before. Every other time, it's just been a handful of people, a handful of members of Congress, one or two. So it's pretty significant, right? The left is calling this treason. They're calling this sedition, right? They're calling this treason and sedition. So I want to go ahead and put this up. This is from Rob Reiner, who, if anyone doesn't know, he's a Hollywood type. I believe he directed The Princess Bride. He's directed a couple things. He's acted in some things. He's a crazy anti-Trumper, right? He's the kind of guy that used the last 4 years to build up his name as an anti-Trumper. This is the quote that's been going around. He says, "Every senator and congressperson who votes to overturn the election will be committing an act of sedition and treason. Their names will be recorded for history." Rob Reiner, anti-Trumper, B-list director. So that's the quote from him. The problem is, it's just completely wrong. It just, nothing about that is true at all. It's not sedition. It's not treason. It's the execution of the objection clause within Title III, Section 15 of the United States Code. And I don't want to bore you with the specifics of this, right? But it's important to know, because this is what the left is pushing out there. They're trying to demonize anyone who stands up and says, "I disagree with this." Treason and sedition have very real definitions. Now, let's talk about them. Let's talk about them. So here you have the U.S. Code, 18 U.S.C. Section 2384. Seditious conspiracy. If two or more persons in any state or territory or in any place subject to the jurisdiction of the United States conspire to overthrow, put down, or to destroy by force, the government of the United States, or to levy war against them, or to oppose by force the authority thereof, or by force, highlighted again, by force, to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States, or by force, to seize, take, or possess any property of the United States contrary to the authority thereof, they shall each be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years. So I went about that. I made sure to highlight the parts where it says by force, because standing up and saying I object to the legitimacy of the Electoral College count for, let's say, Michigan, that is not levying war against the United States. That is not trying to overthrow the government by force. Now, listen, that might happen if the legitimate challenges to the election's legitimacy, if the credible allegations of fraud are not heard and are not taken seriously, it's entirely possible that this turns violent. I've said on the podcast many times, I hope it doesn't. I sincerely hope it doesn't. So it's entirely possible that this could boil over into the streets. I liked Louis Gohmert's statement over the weekend, saying when they dismissed his lawsuit, he was calling on conservatives to be just as violent as Antifa and Black Lives Matter. It's interesting because, yeah, you can interpret that as a call to violence, but the left says that Black Lives Matter and Antifa are not violent. So the leftists took the bait and they used that statement to accuse Louis Gohmert of calling for violence, while then simultaneously admitting, therefore, that BLM and Antifa are violent. See what he did there? It's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. People are talking about my age. I have to scroll up and figure out why they're talking about my age. I wasn't around in 1969 when they challenged us. I just read about it in a book. I was around for the 2000 challenge. But no, I was not around when the Electoral College was challenged in 1969. So that's a seditious conspiracy. You have to overthrow the government by force. Signing a formal objection and submitting it to the president of the Senate or for consideration during the certification vote is not trying to overthrow the government by force. And then he says it could also be treason. Well, let's look at that. Treason is one of the few crimes that's actually defined in the Constitution. It's also expanded upon in U.S. law. Here's 18 U.S.C. section 2381, treason. Whoever owing allegiance to the United States levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death, or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and fined under this title, but not less than 10 grand, and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. So, interestingly, they say that this is treasonous. That's a big deal, because treason is a death penalty offense. Treason is absolutely a death penalty offense. So when you see Rob Reiner, who people are saying all the things he's in, I don't like the guy. I'm sure I've seen a lot of stuff. I know that he directed Princess Bride. When he says it's treasonous to stand up and object, he's saying it should be a death penalty offense. And he's completely wrong. It's not levying war against the United States or adhering to our enemies or giving them aid and comfort. It's not. I mean, this is why you don't turn to Hollywood personalities for legal advice, for constitutional advice, for political advice. They don't know what they're talking about. Yeah, it's a nice little soundbite. Let's put it up again. It's a nice little soundbite. Every congressman and senator who votes to over... You see how he did congressperson? That's very politically correct of him. I almost just glanced over it and just censored it in my mind. He's a congressperson. That's so progressive of him. Every senator and congressperson who votes to overturn the election will be committing an act of sedition and treason. Their names will be recorded for history. Yes, their names will be recorded for history as the brave men and women who were willing to stand up and do what was right. History will remember that all these people stood up and refused to go silently as others attempted to certify fraud. Interesting, interesting. So going to remind everyone, make sure you hit that share button on Facebook. Make sure you give us a thumbs up, a like. Make sure that you comment on YouTube. Make sure you give us a thumbs up for the video. Make sure you subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and share it as well. Very, very important. Our shares have kind of been going down. We just got unthrottled by Facebook. It's big news. We got unthrottled. Apparently, we suffered long enough, so we now can reach more people. So when you share our Facebook post, it will reach more people now. So make sure that you hit that share button. I'm going to take down this quote because I'm tired of seeing that. Here's something from MSNBC. Trump's allies shouldn't be sworn into office until cleared of their own claims of election fraud. This is where the left thinks that they're actually clever. They think they're clever in saying, oh, if you think the election was fraudulent, then how could you possibly be sworn in? It's so stupid. Fine. You want to make that argument? Fine. If you do that, then you do not have the quorum necessary to certify the election. Fine. You want to play that game? We can play that game. But they haven't actually thought it through. But that's what it's come to. That's what it's come to. That they want to argue that, okay, well, if it's fraudulent, you shouldn't be able to challenge the fraud. Very, very interesting. Let's look at a couple other things, because you need to know what the left is saying, because they are trying to build a narrative that the challenge to the Electoral College results are illegitimate. And this is how they're doing it. So we love to talk about the fact checkers. This is from USA Today. This is their fact check. It says, fact check, Congress expelled 14 members in 1861 for supporting the Confederacy. Now, why would they fact check a statement about the Confederacy? Because they're making the argument that every single congressman and senator who objects this time could be expelled from Congress for the equivalent of supporting slavery. I don't know. I don't understand why the USA Today felt they had a need to run this as a fact check on January 2nd of this year, yesterday. The only reason they would do that is to make the argument that if Republicans object, they could be put in the same boat as the people who wanted to continue slavery and were kicked out of the United States Congress for it back in 1861. Here's Chuck Todd, NBC's Chuck Todd, to GOP. Oh, got cut off a little bit. GOP Senator on Electoral College Challenge. You're the arsonist here. No, it is not arson. Standing up and saying, I disagree with the legitimacy, these elections were conducted illegally and unconstitutionally. That doesn't make you an arsonist. That makes you a patriot. But that's the narrative. Then we hear from Mitt Romney. Oh, again, it got cut off. I'll read it. Mitt Romney and other GOP senators say they will oppose an effort by their colleagues to challenge the election results. Can't have that. Can't have that. Can't have Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney won't do what's right. No, he's too invested. He's too invested in the steal, in getting Trump out of office. So this is the kind of language we're seeing, that if you object to it, if you say this doesn't feel right to me, if you say I want an actual investigation, actual audit, that you are an arsonist, that you are a traitor, you committed treason, you committed sedition, right? You've committed a death penalty offense. Make no, like, forget about the fact that Maxine Waters did this 4 years ago and no one was calling for her death. Because she stood up. We made fun of her because she couldn't even manage to get one senator to agree with her, right? Fine. But no one called for her death. I mean, this is why it really feels like we're above the target, right? No one called for Maxine Waters' death. No one called for that Republican and senator's death in 1969, right? When Democrats challenged Ohio in 2004, no one said you should be put to death. You're committing treason. It wasn't even... Like, even the whack jobs didn't even say that, right? There's no one who said put them to death for objecting. I guarantee you, no one said it because it's just so out there. It's so out there, right? But to say, oh, you objected to the Electoral College results, you should be put to death. It's just incredible. It really is incredible. So we have Ted Cruz, right? Ted Cruz is leading this charge. I'm trying to find a clip, an image that I can use. He's been very, very, active the last couple of days. Been very, very active the last couple of days. He wants to challenge it, and he has a bunch of senators joining him to challenge the election results. Let me see if I can find one. Let's go with this. So it's a little over. I'll move it over a little bit. So Cruz is leading a coalition to challenge the results of the 2020 election. The group is calling for a 10-day audit after unprecedented allegations of voter fraud, violations, and lax enforcement of election law and voting irregularities. Yeah, absolutely. That's what we've been calling for from the very beginning. We've been calling for an investigation, an audit. Do not certify the election results until the audit is completed. Absolutely. So what Ted Cruz is saying here is let's pump the brakes and let's take a week and a half to actually really investigate the allegations of fraud, to seriously investigate the allegations of fraud, to make sure that whoever is the next president doesn't have an asterisk next to his name. That's what we've been saying for weeks. And Ted Cruz is now leading that charge to make it happen. Now, this is what doesn't make sense to me. If you're a Democrat, don't you think you would want this? Don't you think you would want an audit? Because listen, no one wants to go into the presidency with an asterisk. Last poll I saw was 80% of Republicans believe that there was election fraud this election and believe that there was enough to impact the results. I saw one poll that almost puts it at 50-50 nationwide. There's like 55-60% think Biden's legitimate, like 40-45% think he isn't. That's almost 50-50, right? Who in their right mind would want to go into the White House knowing that half the country doesn't believe that he's legitimate, right? No one would want that. So you would think that the Democrats would be chomping at the bit for this, saying, yeah, 10 days. And after 10 days, no more complaining. We're going to get to the bottom of it one way or another. If I was in the Democrat shoes, that's what I'd want. If I truly believed that everything was above board and that there's nothing to hide or be worried about, I'd want to put this to bed once and for all. Right? Of course you would. But the Democrats are fighting back with everything they've got, saying that it's treasonous, saying it's destroying our democracy. You've all seen it. Right? That is not the reaction from someone that believes they won legitimately. That is someone who is worried about what such a audit would find. So yes, pump the brakes. And listen, on January 6th, they do not need to declare a winner. There is no requirement within the Constitution. There is no requirement within the Constitution that a winner must be declared on January 6th. The only requirement is that on January 20th, there has to be a president. You can never not have a president. Double negative. You must always have a president. The presidency can never be vacant. It's too important. So yes, if the Electoral College results are not certified, then it would be what's called a disputed election. Then Congress would be able to vote if they wanted to, right? And that's how we've talked about every senator gets a vote, every congressional delegation gets a vote in the House. And then they decide, the House decides the president, Senate decides the vice president. But if they don't do that, right, the Constitution also has a failsafe that if they don't do that by January 20th, then the Speaker of the House becomes the president, which would be Nancy Pelosi, which would be terrified, but she would be president until that vote is held and a winner is decided. So there's no actual requirement that January 6th be the day. Anyone who tells you that it has to be today, time's up, they're just trying to run out the clock, which is what's so infuriating because if this fails on Wednesday, then it worked. And that's what's so terrifying about this. You can steal an election, and as long as you conspire with tech companies to censor it, as long as you conspire with the fact checkers to belittle it, as long as you kick it off the airwaves, even Fox refuses to cover any of the allegations anymore, right? If you can do that, you can run out the clock and certify the fraud. Our system was never designed to root out this level of fraud. It never was. I mean, back in the day, inaugurations used to happen in March, and it was a little easier then, right? But today, the calendar, the way the law is set up, it's not designed to find the fraud. It's designed deliberately to make it hard to find the fraud. So I have faith. Everyone has to have faith, right? A ton of people. Joe's going to DC this week. He'll be there. We'll do the podcast here and have him call in. Probably just call video. Will probably be a little spotty given how many people will be there. But I know a lot of people who are going to DC to protest. And do you see what's happening in DC? They are closing the hotels. The United States Constitution, the First Amendment, gives every American the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That is what is happening on January 6th. All the patriots going to Washington, D.C. are there to petition the government for a redress of grievances. They do not believe the election was legitimate, and they are protesting to make sure their voice is heard. What is the D.C. government doing? Forcing all the hotels to close. Just like they did when Glenn Beck has big rally, they're probably going to play funny business with the metro and with public transportation, right? They're probably going to enforce social distancing and mask requirements and try and crack down on any gathering on the National Mall. They're going to make it as hard as possible for people to protest the steal. Now listen, if you truly believe that your side is just, that you did everything right, you don't silence conspiracy theorists. No one, yes, they're also shutting down roads, shutting down bridges. No one has ever, it was never the proposal, any serious proposal to shut conspiracy theorists down. If you looked at it, it was always you wanted to amplify it. You wanted to give them a voice because to show how ridiculous it was, right? I hope there's no flat earthers on the podcast. I don't believe that the earth is flat. If anyone who believes the earth is flat, I believe that they should be allowed to speak as loudly as they want, right? Because you don't crack down on flat earthers. You let them speak. And you know what? If maybe we're all wrong and they can be right, I don't know. But frankly, I think it's much better to, when you disagree with something, when you know something's completely off, let them speak their mind and then pick apart the argument. Don't silence them. Don't cancel hotel reservations. Don't close bridges and streets to make it impossible to get into DC, right? Don't kick them off of social media. Let them talk. And if what they say is ridiculous, let everyone see how ridiculous it is. Anyone ever hear of the Streisand effect? There was a picture of Barbara Streisand's home. A photographer took a photo of it, and she didn't want it on the internet. So she sued to try and get it taken out of publication, taken off the internet. She didn't want anyone to see the picture of her property. Well, the Streisand effect is when you try and stop a message from getting out, it actually just makes more people see it, right? Because since she tried to fight to stop the photo from making the rounds, more people looked at it because they were curious about what she didn't want them to see. It's the Streisand effect. The same is true with so-called conspiracy theories. The place to disinfect them, the place to dismantle them is in the public. Not censoring them. You censor people who you're worried are telling the truth and you think are dangerous. So yeah, it's you can see what the left is doing. They're scared because all of their election challenges have all been crazy Maxine Waters standing up and shouting. Now you will have over 140 congressional Republicans and over a dozen GOP senators objecting. So what's the process going to look like? What's the process going to look like on the 6th? So as we mentioned, a joint session of Congress will basically be called into order. And Mike Pence, as the vice president, will serve as the president of the Senate. And the 12th Amendment of the United States Constitution says that he must open the ballots and he must open anything, quote, purporting, end quote, to be an Electoral College ballot. That's the interesting part of this. The Constitution and U.S. law, Title 3, Section 15 of the United States Code, do not dictate what is and what is not a ballot. It simply says he has to open anything purporting to be a ballot. So technically, right, if those Trump electors who cast their protest votes, if they can get that sheet of paper, just like we showed, literally, it used to just be loose leaf. If they can get this into Mike Pence's hand, he can count it. Now, it's much easier for a state legislature to certify it because then it's a lot more legitimate. Then you're not asking Mike Pence just to, on his own, declare it to be a fraudulent election, right? Much easier to have a state legislature do it. But technically, Mike Pence can count anything that he believes purports itself to be an Electoral College vote tally. So he counts the votes. If at any point there is an objection to that vote, a congressman and a senator must submit it in writing. You need to have one of each, otherwise it won't be heard. They have to submit their objection clearly in writing without any argumentation. And if it's accepted, if they follow those basic rules, no argumentation, one of each, then each chamber of Congress adjourns, has 2 hours of debate, one hour pro, 1 hour con, holds a vote, comes back. This is the part where Edmund Muskie and Representative James O'Hara, this is where that part I told you about the 1969 challenge gets important. They didn't challenge the state of North Carolina. They challenged the individual elector. They didn't challenge all 13. They challenged one single Electoral College vote. And this is important. Because if you add up all 6 of the states, Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, I believe it's 78, 79, high 70s, the number of total Electoral College electors. I think it's 78. If you were to challenge every single elector from those states, that would afford them 78 hours to lay out evidence of the fraud. And this is where before I didn't want to do it. I said that's a little overkill. But hearing that there are people like Mitt Romney who will fight no matter what, Senator John Thune of South Dakota will fight against this no matter what, Mitch McConnell will fight against this no matter what, even if both of the Republicans in Georgia win, which that isn't even a guarantee yet, even if they both win, those 3 Senate Republicans voting no is enough to stop the Senate from siding with the objectors. So it's going to take a lot of flips to win this thing in the Congress. And we're still fighting for this, right? We have a fax blast out today to keep putting pressure because it's working. The momentum's on our side, Right, Mitch McConnell wanted zero senators to object, and now we're at 12. The momentum is definitely on our side. But if it is not in the cards, if it's just not going to happen, if we cannot get enough Republicans on board and we cannot get any Democrats on board to vote to stop the Electoral College votes from being certified, then we have to make sure that we lay everything on the table. And this is where the pettiness of objecting to every single elector is necessary. There's six states in contention, right? Six states. If you challenge each individual state, that means that you, the side that says it's fraudulent, get 6 total hours to lay out all of the evidence of voter fraud and irregularity. 6 hours is not enough. 1 hour per state is simply not enough. It's not enough time. It's not enough time. But if you challenge all 78 of the electors, you get 78 hours. 78 total hours to make the case. You can literally go one after another. You can do it. You have a little PowerPoint. Your hour's up. You end on slide 20, right? You hold the vote. You go back. Another objection's filed. You go back for debate. You say, okay, where was I? Ah, slide 21. You can keep going. 78 hours. And this is why I don't really think it's petty anymore to do this. Because that is on the record. That is publicly broadcast for the entire country. And it is added to the Library of Congress, right? No more of Neil Cavuto on Fox News cutting away from White House press conferences because he cannot in good conscience let you hear Kayleigh McEnany lay out evidence of election fraud. No more of that. No more of CNN refusing to show it. No more of MSNBC refusing to show it. No more of the fact checkers stopping people from hearing the truth. 78 hours, by objecting to every single one, 78 hours of laying out the evidence, bit by bit by bit, 78 hours added to the Library of Congress and making the case so that if this does become violent, at least we laid out the case. At least we made the case. At least the evidence is there for people to access without requiring, without having to deal with the gatekeepers in big tech or big media. I was saying it froze up. You don't want to have to deal with the gatekeepers, right? You don't want to have to deal with the gatekeepers. All 78 hours, challenge every single elector. If you don't think, and this is, I'm literally speaking to the GOP at this point, if you do not think you have the votes to stop the Electoral College counts from being heard, challenge every single elector and spend all 78 hours allotted to you of debate fully laying out the case. Because if we go through this and the best they do is they challenge all six states, 6 hours of total debate, and they say, oh, we tried, we will have ended this process never actually having all the evidence heard. I mean, they had a whole stack of binders this tall in Nevada that a judge just threw out. That takes more than an hour to go through to actually lay out the evidence. I'm calling for them to bring out the easels, to bring out the television sets. Go slide by slide by slide and prosecute the case. Do what the media, social media, the courts, the fact checkers, what they never allowed to happen. Make sure that everything gets out there. And then listen, if it becomes violent, then as I've said in the past, we've done everything we possibly could. We've done everything we possibly could. And yes, we made the case to the American people. If we were wrong, you would see the polls going the other way. You would see Joe Biden's support for his legitimacy increasing, not decreasing. Right? You'd see Republicans stop believing that it was fraudulent and start believing that Joe Biden's duly elected. You're not seeing that. You're not seeing that. And that's the consequence of the left, of the media, of tech companies not engaging in the debate, but branding anyone who disagrees a conspiracy theorist. Like, that's the true threat to our democracy, to our republic, our representative democracy. The real threat is branding half the country as conspiracy theorists because they want answers. That's all we've ever talked about on the show, answers. And we've hypothesized, we've presented theories of lots of different ways to explain the irregularities that we talked about the day after the election, Right? Never forget, Donald Trump was winning by a landslide until they all the states stopped counting the votes. And then they started recounting, and oh, sorry, he's losing. No one's ever actually engaged with it and actually, like, pushed to answer the question. To answer the questions, to explain the irregularities, to explain the anomalies. No one has done it. And I don't think they plan to. I think they intend to actually run out the clock and say that Joe Biden was legitimate. Anyone who disagrees is a conspiracy theorist. Don't you dare disagree. Fall in line. Fall in line, citizen, subject. It's interesting. Did anyone see, I don't think I have it, but did anyone see Raffensperger in Georgia? He responded, let me see if I can find it. He responded to, He responded to the, to Pulitzer, the guy who in Georgia laid out the evidence for fraud, talked about hacking the machines, right? He actually responded to it. And what he said was shocking. Absolutely shocking. I think it was Raffensperger. It might have been Kemp. They're kind of both rhinos in my book. What he said was he actually went after Pulitzer personally. He used ad hominem attacks. He made fun of his tech background. He made fun of another company that had previously failed, right? Trying to demean him personally. Now, anyone who's ever taken a debate class knows that as soon as whoever resorts to ad hominem attacks first, that's the one who's lost the debate, right? If you're not willing to actually step on the battlefield and debate over the ideas, and you're too busy demeaning the person, that's a pretty good sign that you've lost the debate. And here, the official Georgia state government response to Pulitzer's testimony was to call him a fraud, to make fun of him. Apparently, at one point, he invented something that was shaped like a cat, and they made fun of him for that. Made fun of him for having a business fail and losing money. When you go that way, when you launch the ad hominem attacks against someone, you have lost the debate because you cannot actually debate the ideas, the argumentation. I was shocked to see that, but that's what we've seen the whole time. That's what we've seen from everyone who has responded to these allegations of fraud, credible allegations of fraud, and the unexplained irregularities, that you're a kook, you're insane, you're crazy, if you want answers, that if you expect an explanation. It's insane. It's insane that we've let them do this. I've never seen this in my life. The idea that we're just going to, that the establishment is just going to vilify anyone who disagrees. This is 1984 stuff. This is definitionally Orwellian. Thought crimes. How dare you think this way? I would be remiss if I didn't also remind that in 1984, the government unleashed a virus specifically to seize control. I'm not going to make any commentary on our current situation, but in 1984, the government used a virus as an excuse to take control and then trampled on everyone's rights. That's just 1984. I'm not making any commentary on 2020. That would be bad, and the fact checkers would definitely ding me for that. But interesting little comparison given what we're dealing with today and what happened in 1984. Weaponizing a virus to take control and get rid of everyone's rights and liberties. Interesting. Interesting. But we've never experienced this. We've never experienced this, where if you disagree with the left, you're branded as a conspiracy theorist. I'll put it up again. People are saying, yeah, Carl, you're right, in the comment section on Facebook, Bizarro World. This is Bizarro World. Rob Reiner saying that anyone who objects is committing a death penalty offense. That is Bizarro World. How did we get here? How did we get to the point where they actually believe that disagreeing with them should be a death penalty offense? How did we get there? How did we let them get here? Listen, it's that old poem. I read it on the podcast before from World War II. First they came for the communists, and I was not a communist, so I didn't care. Right? Then they came for them. Then they came for them. Every time I wasn't one of them, so I didn't care. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Conservatives should have fought back much harder when they went after people like Milo Yiannopoulos, when they went after people like Alex Jones. We should have fought very, very hard then. But the GOP clapped. Establishment GOPers clapped when Alex Jones was deplatformed. They said he had it coming, not understanding the slippery slope that we were all racing down. I mean, we tried to blow the whistle on it, but it was obvious what they were going to try and do. We knew what they were going to try and do. I'm going to put this up on the screen. This is incredible. I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday. I think I did. This is incredible. This vote. So you had the Republicans in the Senate vote to override Trump's veto on the defense bill. They refused to amend Section 230 to get rid of big tech's power. They said, nope, we're not going to do it. So Senate Republicans did that. Senate Republicans voted to preserve big tech's power to censor conservatives. The same day they did that, at NRSC, the Senate majority, the Twitter account for the Republican majority, tweeted out complaining about how Facebook had shut down the ad account for the Georgia Battleground Fund, a joint fundraising committee for NRSC, Purdue, and Loeffler. So they, when it actually came time to vote, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't vote to remove big tech's power to censor. Immediately afterwards, they complain that they're being censored. I mean, it's so ridiculous. And they're fundraising off of it. That's the most disgusting part of this. They're fundraising off of this. They had the power. They had the power to not override Trump's veto and to force Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats to remove Section 230 or amend it in order to have a military again. Right? They could have held the line. Instead, they folded like a cheap suit and immediately turn around and start pretending that you didn't notice. Start pretending that you didn't see what they did. Start pretending that you don't realize just how hypocritical they are. Do not donate a cent to these people. Do not donate a cent to these people. They had the power to stop this, and they deliberately chose not to. Because they think you're too stupid to realize. And that's kind of been the whole purpose of this podcast, to do deep, not this episode, but the whole podcast as a whole, to do deep dives into issues that the media won't cover and that the establishment desperately don't want you to think about, right? This podcast, we've always focused on taking things that might get 30 seconds on mainstream media, if that, and we devote full hours to it. We devote 45 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour to one topic that if you're lucky, you will get 30 seconds on the mainstream media. Because it's important. It's vitally important. And yeah, we talk about things like obscure ATF regulations, which we won that fight. We talk about the rules changes. We talk about intricacies within the process that the establishment is hoping and praying you won't catch wind on, that you won't figure out what they're up to. We focus on that because that has to be our job. That has to be our job because it doesn't seem like anyone else is doing it. Which is why, again, I will tell you, if you haven't already, make sure that you like and follow our Facebook page. Make sure you subscribe and hit the bell for notifications on YouTube. Make sure you share this video. Share it. Give us a thumbs up. Comment. Right? If you haven't already, go to the audio version of the podcast. Subscribe there. I really feel, and this, it's depressing in a way, but it also makes me realize that we're doing the right thing, that no one else is doing this. No one else is trying to blow the whistle and call it what it is. So make sure, everyone, that you like and follow our page, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications on YouTube, and make sure you subscribe to the audio version of the podcast. It's a new year. It's a new year. And listen, I hope and pray that on January 6th, this whole mess gets reversed. I pray. Like, I have faith. I know it is possible. But as we've said on the podcast before, don't call me a doomer. It is equally possible that the January 6th movement fails. So we are positioning ourselves to make sure that, yes, we are fighting to stop the steal. We will never stop looking into, examining the evidence of fraud, evidence of voter fraud, election fraud, the irregularities. We're going to keep covering all that. But if for whatever reason we are not successful on Wednesday, we are going to all need to fight like hell to make sure that this fraudulent president is not able to enact his illegitimate agenda. So we're going to fight that tooth, and we're going to fight that every step of the way, and we hope that you will stand by us as we do it. Well, that's going to be it for this weekend edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. Hope it was informative. Big day on January 6th. Joe will be there. I will not. I have to stay home and help my wife with our newborn. Otherwise, I would be there, but Joe will be there. So we'll call him up and have him give us a report from the field. He'll be our little field reporter that day. We're going to cover it. We'll probably have C-SPAN playing on the side. We'll go in and out as necessary. It's going to be a long day. Whether they challenge each state or they challenge each elector, it is going to be a long, long day. It's going to be a long week. And we're going to make sure that we are there to cover it. Well, that's going to be it for this edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. You'll notice at the top of the podcast, we have two links in the descriptions on YouTube and Facebook and the audio description. One is a link to donate to Conservative Daily as we fight the lawsuits. Now also included is a link to help Joe mount his own personal legal defense, because they are suing him as an individual and they are suing him as an agent of Conservative Daily. So we've added that second one in there. If you can, please do donate to Joe's personal legal defense. Not only is that going to go towards the legal fees, but if it goes to trial, that will help make sure that discovery is very fruitful, right? Because it's one thing to get discovery. It's another thing to hire the experts necessary to do a deep dive and forensic analysis. Ooh. Into the machines that discovery would give you access to. So please do check out that second link and donate to Joe's personal legal defense fund if you can. There's also links in the description to sign up for to subscribe to the audio version of the podcast. Very, very important. We're close to inking some deals with some big sponsors. The way we do that is by proving the numbers, and the easiest way to do that is through audio downloads. So make sure if you haven't already, subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you have an iPhone, Google Podcasts if you have an Android phone. We're on Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and Podbean. All links in the description. We go live normally Monday through Saturday, this week, Sunday, at 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you like and follow our Facebook page. Make sure that you subscribe, hit the bell for notifications on YouTube. The text went out, but if you aren't already in our text list, text the word freedom to 89517 and you'll get a text alert when we go live, so you don't have to rely on Facebook or YouTube to do it. We're also on Parler at Conservative Daily. Make sure you follow us there. We have a link for our email newsletter, very important. And we are also on Rumble, rumble.com/user/conservative daily. Link in the description. Podcast episodes will go live on Rumble after the broadcast. I think I hit everything. So that's going to be it for this edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure that you subscribe. Very, very important. Again, my name is Max McGuire. Remember that the fight to take back our country clearly is not over yet, but the only way we win is if we all stand up and fight together.